Good morning, Chairman Parker, members of the board. My name is Nick Bennett. I'm the staff scientist for the Natural Resources Council of Maine, and I reside in Hallwall. NRCM, Natural Resources Council of Maine, continues to strongly oppose these rules. I just want to quickly give you the reasons why. First, the simple ones. We oppose mining on public lands. We oppose mining underneath rivers, lakes, streams, coastal waters. That one seems to be something that's worth a little bit of explanation. One of the things about an underground mine is that only the part where you're taking out the ore is underground. There are huge surface facilities, even associated with a tiny mine like the Eagle Mine. That's tiny. It's like a tenth the size of the ore body at Bald Mountain. So how relevant that is in terms of the discussions we've been having about what kind of mines we expect to see in Maine, I don't know. But that's got a huge surface facility associated with it, with discharges, next to a really good brook trout fishery. And so that mine had a lot of public opposition to it, and Michigan went ahead and permitted it. I don't know that they made the right move on that, but I think you can understand why many people who own lakefront property or riverfront property would be very scared about having a mine underneath their lake or their riverfront property, because the surface facility is going to be just like the surface facility at a open pit mine. There's going to be a lot of trucks. There's going to be big environmental impacts. There's going to be discharges to the water body, et cetera. So I don't think that it's reasonable to just think of a mine shaft under a lake. It's just a hole that's going to go under a lake. It's going to be a hole that goes under a lake, and you got to put the surface facility somewhere nearby that processes all that stuff. So think about the impacts of what that would be to water bodies like Cobscook Bay, Moosehead Lake, any of our lakes. Lakes are a huge economic driver in Maine. They support more than 50,000 jobs. They supply over $3 billion in total economic impact to the state annually. Just that's the basis for our opposition for this, in addition to the risk of water quality contamination of these water bodies. So public lands, mining under water bodies, we continue to oppose those things. Next I'm going to go to financial assurance. I know what a worst case scenario is. I don't know what DEP's long paragraph that Mr. Crawford read to you today says. I think that if they want to have clear financial assurance language, they can do it. Here's the problem that we see with what these rules are likely to allow, and what the reason we are so persistent about the financial assurance issue. And that is because financial assurance is usually given in the amount of a few million bucks. It's something like 10, you look at mines that have been disasters, like the Summitville mine in Colorado or the Beal Mountain mine in Montana, both modern mines, started in the late 80s, both costing somewhere in the area of $200 to $500 million to clean up. The financial assurance that the companies put forward was about $6 to $10 million. That's just in the wrong order of magnitude. When you're dealing with these types of facilities, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars to clean up. The $6 to $10 million, the $20 million, that's in case sometimes these companies are more like wildcatters than they are big established mining firms, and they don't have a lot of money. And if they just go bankrupt because the price of metal goes down, then $10 million can help you put a site to bed if nothing horrible has gone wrong, or $20 million. That's a reasonable amount of money if what you're doing is talking about putting a small mine site to bed where there hasn't been a disaster. But that's not the big problem with mining. That's not where it ends up costing taxpayers huge amounts of money. Where it ends up costing taxpayers a huge amount of money is when a disaster happens. And they happen too often. And the disasters are not in the $20 million range. They're in the $200 million range or the $1 billion range. and they take decades to clean up. And it's not fair to make Maine people pay for that. And so we want a clear statement that mining companies have to put up enough money to pay for their disasters and to pay for potential disasters. That's not what we read in the language that Mr. Crawford said to you today. And we don't think it should be hard, if that's what DEP wants to do, to make that language clear. It still isn't. And we think it's very important that that determination of what the cost is and the amount of money that should go up front, whether it's in bonds or whether it's in cash or whatever, that needs to be done by a third party with some expertise in this issue, because the department hasn't done financial assurance calculations for mines. Nobody did this kind of stuff in the 1970s when we had mines here in Maine. And that's a long time ago. So we want that done by a third party. I don't think that's that complicated to do if that's what the department really wants to do. And so we get frustrated when, after 5 years of asking for this, because that's when it started, is 5 years ago, we still get what looks like gobbledygook to us about financial assurance. It should be clear. It should be understandable to the public that they're not going to have to pay for a potential mining disaster. That just seems fair to us. The other big issue that, well, there are two other big issues. One of those is the wet mine waste units. For the first time today, I heard Mr. Stebbins say a tailings impoundment is a wet mine waste unit. We've been asking again and again and again since 2012. Well, actually, I think they introduced wet mine waste units in 2013. So for 4 years, what's the difference between a wet mine waste unit and a tailings impoundment? And we've gotten no answer. So the answer is there is no difference, right? It's just a different waste stream. So a tailings impoundment is for handling the fine material that settles to the bottom of flotation tanks where you're trying to get the desired ore to the top so you can skim that off. And then there's a lot of fine junk that settles to the bottom, and you discharge that to an impoundment. That's a common procedure. And in cases where those tailings are acid generating, it's also a common procedure to cover them with water, so that you lower the amount of acid generation, not eliminate it. And that's a dangerous situation, because these tailings impoundments can be enormous. The dams have to last forever, and they fail. And in fact, 80% of tailings dam failures occur during the active life of the mine, not after the mine has closed, because that's when you're putting in more stuff, you're pumping in more tailings, and that's when the stresses on the dams are biggest. And the idea, okay, so you take a site like Bald Mountain, which, you know, is the one we've had as our center of discussion. It's about a 30 million ton ore body. A general rule of thumb, and it's just a general rule of thumb, 99% of what you've got in an ore body is waste. 1% of the stuff is what you're after. So you're starting there with 29 million tons of waste. Some of that's going to be tailings. Some of that's going to be waste rock. That doesn't include the overburden, which doesn't count as the ore body. But that may still be acid generating. It may still leach heavy metals. So let's say roughly for a small to middling mine like Bald Mountain, you're probably dealing with about 100 million tons of stuff, roughly, just for the sake of argument. And maybe 40 million tons of that is tailings, and they're saying dry management for tailings, great. 60 million tons of it is other stuff. You're going to put that underwater, and then you're going to dig it up and put it somewhere else? That is just not comprehensible to me. And the idea that all of this is big boulders is preposterous, because how do you get waste rock out of a mine? You blast it. That means you get a lot of particulate matter in there. And so whatever acid-generating material is in the waste rock that you cover with water and put behind a dam is going to generate acid. It's going to leach metals. If that dam fails, it's not going to be a bunch of big boulders that stay in place. You'll have some boulders that stay in place. You'll also have a lot of fine material that moves downstream. You'll have a lot of acid and heavy metal contamination in the impoundment that would also move downstream. it's just not reasonable to think that once you have covered this stuff with water, you're going to dig it up. And in point of fact, while covering water to limit acid generation is indeed a common mining practice, it's a really dangerous one. It does limit acid generation. There's no question about that, but it greatly increases the risk of a physical structural failure, and that's a big concern. And I just want to read very quickly. This is from a publication on that was the Proceedings on Tailings and Mine Waste in 2011 in British Columbia. It's a paper that came out of that conference called Mine Waste Management in Wet Mountainous Terrain, Some British Columbia Perspectives. And I give you this paper, but instead I'm just going to read. So here's what a quote from this paper says about managing tailings impoundments or waste rock impoundments. The principles of sustainability mandate that we consider fully today and in the future the nature of that bequest, how best to manage it, and how it is likely to come to be viewed and managed by future generations. The bequest is these tailings impoundments. For there is never an inopportune moment to step back and contemplate what we are doing today and planning for tomorrow. In BC, provincial guidelines observe that for subaqueous disposal, to effectively prevent acid rock drainage over the long term, the storage location must remain permanently flooded and geotechnically stable. Okay? These are permanent facilities. The idea that a mining company is going to have 40 million tons of waste rock under a 100-acre pond and then dig it all up and ship it to a hazardous waste site in New York by train or some other way, that's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And I think you should strongly continue to question DEP on why they think that it's reasonable to allow wet mine waste units during the life of the mine, but not afterwards. Because if you allow a wet mine waste unit during the life of the mine, you're going to have it forever. And there should just be some truth in advertising here. Finally, we have tried and have asked the board to address the issue of groundwater contamination. That's really what this whole issue is about, is how much groundwater contamination do you allow for a mine? And J.D. Irving and the proponents of the 2012 law came in and said, well, we've got a complete ban on groundwater contamination in Maine in the 1991 rules, and that equates to a complete ban on mining. So what are we going to do? We're going to allow infinite amounts of groundwater contamination in the mining area. There is something in between that, that might lower between zero and infinite, that might lower the risks of contamination spreading to our surface waters. I would just urge you to consider recommending that the legislature think about that, because going from zero to infinite is not necessary. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions for that? Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak.